1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Another edition of Feldis and Kale, this one presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And our guest on this edition of the program, State Representative Dave Luneau. And Dave serves on the House Education Committee, and in 2020 was the chair of the Commission to Study School Funding. And results of that study were released in December. Dave served on the Hopkinton School Board for 12 years, currently serves on boards at UNH and NHTI. And Dave, we welcome you to Feldis and Kale.
Hey, thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here with you guys.
Great to have you here, Dave.
And Dave, you are widely respected in the field of education and school funding, and you know, certainly folks in Hopkinton in particular know you and respect, greatly respect all the work you did on the school board. Walk us through a little bit about the importance of state funding for local school districts, just as a broad matter, and then we'll get into the funding report that you worked on.
Sure. No, thanks. Thanks very much for those kind words, Dan. And you know, as a matter of a state obligation, there's a requirement that that the state funds public education. And in fact, in our state constitution, it uses the words cherish, which I think was key to the groundbreaking landmark Claremont decision of decades ago. And and unfortunately, not much has changed since that decision basically placed the state on notice that it needs to adequately fund its public schools. And you know, I guess, and you know, and this is the thing. I mean, Dan, you and I campaigned together for a while too, and you know, we'd go around knocking on doors, and you know, first things. I mean, Granite Staters get it. A lot of what we heard was, you know, what are you doing about school funding, and what are you doing about my property taxes? And
right.
And you know, and it's you know, it's all over the place when it comes to you know, the state of New Hampshire. You've got you know, some places like you know, Charlestown that are close to $40 per thousand. I mean, certainly Claremont's up there too. But then you've got places like Newcastle and Newington, where it's you know, closer to $5, even less than that. So a lot of variation when it comes to comes to property taxes. Anyway, yeah, that's that was sort of, you know, how we got into this thing, and what brought it to the forefront for us.
And certainly in the last budget, you know, working together, we delivered historic state support for education funding, in part by closing loopholes for out-of-state corporations to invest in our local school districts, invest in our communities. And working together, we finally did full adequacy for full-day kindergarten, finally treated kindergartners like any other grade. And Dave, working with Dave on that, Dave was instrumental in helping move that forward. So part of that budget, though, was also funding the School Funding Commission to take a look at how do we move forward even more on school funding. And can you talk to us a little bit about what the School Funding Commission is, what did it do, and what was its recommendations?
Sure. No, be glad to do that. So you're absolutely right, Dan. I mean, that was a key legislative priority during the last session, where you and I worked very closely with colleagues across the state in making education funding, making school funding, you know, a top legislative priority. And there were three parts to that. The one that you talked about, where we restored almost $150 million in funding over the 2-year biennium, and that's $150 million that doesn't have to be raised in property taxes. It helps to increase the state's commitment to public education, and helps to improve the educational opportunities for students across the Granite State. And we did that in FY20 and FY21. That was the first part of it. The second part of it was to get the commission to study school funding up and running, which we did in 2020. It's part of the current state budget that we're in right now, and what it did was basically pull together a group, a handful of legislators, but 16 members of the public from all different backgrounds. Some have backgrounds in education, others has had backgrounds in tax policy. We had some lawyers on the commission as well, special educators and special education were part of it, and most significantly, and this hasn't been done since in nearly 40 years, we contracted with not only the University of New Hampshire to help support the research and logistics activities of the commission, but we engaged an outside expert in school funding, and they provided the commission with a lot of research and analysis using New Hampshire's own data, using nearly 20 years of data collected in New Hampshire, and what the commission learned was actually not obvious and pretty startling.
Well, what were some of those findings that were startling, Dave?
Well, thanks, Ken. Many of us went into this thinking that that taxpayer fairness was the big problem, and it's certainly a big problem. And it continues today, but what we learned over the nearly 12-month study was that student outcomes vary dramatically as well, just as dramatically as tax rates do, and what this translates into is basically opportunities for our kids all across the Granite State to have a fair shot at a good, you know, strong future. And you know, sitting here, you know, I'm here in my office in Hopkinton, and we've got Hopkinton's got a great school district, you know, be splitting hairs, you know, with Concord and Bow, great school districts right here. And there's certainly a lot of others throughout the state too. But we don't have to go very far. A little bit east, you get out to Pittsfield. A little bit northwest, you know, 20 minutes up the road from here, you get up into Newport, and you're talking about districts where the average student in those districts is really underperforming state average by a lot. And in fact, you go down the road to Manchester. So Manchester's our state's largest school district, nearly 13,000 kids. The average student there performs at the fifth percentile.
Wow!
And that's not anything that anybody's proud about. You know, kids aren't proud about that. Families, moms and dads, aren't proud about that. Overall, we've got a lot to be proud of with public education in New Hampshire. We're ranked, regularly, top five or six nationally, in terms of average student outcomes in New Hampshire, statewide student outcomes. But it's just not everywhere. Not in Manchester, it's not in Pittsfield. Recognizing those student disparities was really, I think, an eye-opening thing for the commission.
So some folks went in thinking that a predominant feature would be the so-called property taxpayer equity issue across the state, but coming out of it, recognizing that student equity and student outcomes has disparate impacts across the state, and that's a key feature of what needs to be addressed.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. And, I'll admit, I was one of the people that thought this was all about tax fairness. And that's part of it. But student fairness is the most important piece. And what we found, again, working with our research partners at UNH and at the American Institutes for Research, our our independent contractor for this study, we were able to see that if you can solve the student equity piece, then the taxpayer fairness follows that. So if you do it the other way around, and there are some states that did it the other way around, you know, led taxpayer equity as the number one thing. Student equity, student fairness doesn't necessarily follow that, but it does if you lead with student fairness.
Our guest is Dave Luneau, and we're talking about school funding today on Feldis and Kale. We're going to take a short break. 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. State Representative Dave Luneau is our guest. And Dave, in the previous segment, we were talking about the differences in the education youngsters receive in Concord, Bow, and Hopkinton, for example, as opposed to Manchester, Newport, and Pittsfield. Why did you find there was such a discrepancy in the education they receive and how students were performing?
So thanks for asking, Ken. And you know, I'm by no means am throwing these Manchester, Pittsfield, Newport, Claremont, others under the bus. They have fantastic school leadership, great school boards, great teaching faculty and staff. But these districts are working really hard to try to fund their schools, and about 70% of school the school budget is funded through local property taxes. State of New Hampshire does about 31%, and actually a third of that is the state property tax. So nearly 80% of school budgets are actually funded through property taxes, and some places have an easier time raising the dollars they need to fund those budgets than others. And you look at some cities like Portsmouth. If you're lucky enough to have an ocean or a lake or a mountain, you're able to have fairly low property tax rates and generate significant generate dollars needed to fund your school budgets. Whereas a lot of other towns, actually, I'd throw Hopkinton into this. We work really, really hard, and I think we're an example of where we're at the breaking point here, in terms of our ability to raise property taxes to raise funds through property taxes to support public education, and a lot of places are well beyond it. Berlin, Pittsfield, Newport, Charlestown, and many others, and Manchester, and they work super hard, but they're just not able to provide the funds necessary to have budgets that are comparable with a lot of other school districts across the state, and that's inherently and a lack of fairness, and who pays the price on that? Well, certainly taxpayers do, but also the students do, and that's where the discovery was looking at decades of New Hampshire data. Fortunately, we've been able to collect a lot of student performance data over the last 10, 20 years, including performance on standardized tests or statewide exams, attendance rates and graduation rates, and really the performance really drops out of the analysis of that, and you can see a very, very tight correlation with districts that that are well financed, that can raise, you know, the amount of the money they need to support their school budgets, and the districts that can't. And in the districts that can't, the performance reflects that.
Well, Dave, in terms of the final recommendations, in terms of the School Funding Commission, certainly there are those on the far right who argue that we spend too much, in their view, on schools. And then there are those on the far left who suggest that the only way to deal with this is instituting a broad-based, in their view, a broad-based income tax, again, in their view, to fund public schools. Obviously, in the last budget, we closed loopholes for big corporations, out-of-state corporations, to fund more fully fund public education, historic public ed funding. What was the ultimate recommendations in this report in terms of that, and what are some of the next steps that are needed to follow up on it?
Yeah, so no, that's a great question. So you know, let me tackle one of them right up front. What New Hampshire is currently spending statewide, all in statewide on public education is probably just about right. So all in, we're somewhere around $3.1 billion statewide, and that's from all funding sources, local, state, and federal, in that order. And that's about right, and it gets us good statewide results. Like I said, top five in the country. You know, if you divide that number by the number of students, about 168,000 students across the state in our public schools, you get a number that's relatively average, you know, in terms of the other surrounding states here in New England. We're right there. A couple of really key recommendations that come out of the report really, I think, set the framework for what the legislature needs to consider. The first is how you go about costing an adequate education, and our current formula, which has been around a long time, comes to about $4,000 per student, but it's based on adding up a bunch of costs that go into public schools. So one teacher for every 30 kids, one principal for every 500 kids or something like that. I'm not looking at that right now, but it's sort of tangible costs for operating buildings, transportation, and things like that. I think it gets down even to one guidance counselor for 500 kids, one library media specialist for 500 students. I think when if parents are hearing numbers like that, they're probably thinking, wow, that's sort of nuts, because I know my school kids aren't sitting in classrooms with 29 other kids, in there, or one guidance counselor for 500 kids. I mean, that line's, the line to see the guidance counselor would be wrapped around the building. So it's got this really sort of antiquated, arcane funding formula. A much better funding formula, costing formula would be based on equitable student outcomes. So that was one of the things that the commission spent time on, was developing a connection between what specific student and district characteristics lead to in terms of student costs. And so quite frankly, it's going to cost more to educate 1,000 kids in Manchester than 1,000 kids in Bedford. And so recognizing an outcomes-based costing formula really levels the playing field so that kids can know that they've got a fair chance, no matter what school they're attending in the state. So I would say that is the number one recommendation, and right next to it is really you know, how you go about applying state funds. And right now we use this sort of one size fits all. You know, every district, no matter if you're Newport or Pittsfield or Newcastle or Portsmouth, you get this flat about $4,000 per kid, and from the state, and you know, the state really needs to be applying its limited resources to where they're needed most. So for the districts that have the most challenging time using local tax dollars to fund public education, those are the districts that need additional financial support for the state. I think the ultimate place we want to be is where students get a fair shake all across the state, and the taxpayer in Portsmouth is working just as hard as the taxpayer in Charlestown or the taxpayer in Claremont or Berlin or Hopkinton or Concord, you know, in terms of supporting their public schools. It should just be fair for students and taxpayers.
So the bottom line is it's really an inequitable system. That's what it boils down to, pretty much, right?
Yeah, and actually, that's I think, Ken, if there was a headline that came out of the independent the research report on this, it basically says for large segments of our student and taxpayers, our current system of funding is just not working.
Of course, the state budget now, Dave, is in the state Senate. There's a hearing next week, May 4th. Folks who want to register their opinion should go online, and you know, you can testify at that hearing via Zoom. You can also provide input to the Senate Finance Committee, have your voice heard, your family and your community. But the House budget that was passed was drastically different than the budget that we worked on in the last session. In terms of education funding, can you tell us where that budget is right now, the House passed budget by the House Republican leadership, and as it stands sitting before the Senate? Obviously, the Senate traditionally does different things than the House, but where is the budget right now on education funding?
Yeah, so as it left the House, I mean, the House really doubled down on this, you know, 19th century, you know, school funding design, where it's sort of like this one size fits all flat funding mechanism. There was a lot of, you know, sort of fist pumps and stuff on this giving everybody a 50-cent tax break on the state property tax. So, you know, I don't know what that means for, you know, for the taxpayer in Charlestown who's paying almost $40 per thousand. You know, for the taxpayer in Newcastle who's paying $6 per thousand, yeah, 50 cents is a pretty decent chunk. You know, I'm not making light of, you know, a few hundred bucks either way. I think that's all helpful, but clearly, you know, a flat change in the state property tax affects towns differently. Probably the biggest thing it does, though, is it removes the equitable grants that we worked, you and I worked really hard to get in the budget 2 years ago, Dan, and in our current school year, that's, you know, saving districts or supporting districts with nearly $65 million worth of additional aid from the state. And so that all disappears, and you know, and that's, you know, districts are going to have to find, I mean, some districts were able to use those funds for one-time expenses, whether that's doors and windows, roofs, stuff like that, but there are a lot of districts that put that towards tax reduction or program enhancement, and those districts are going to have to find where to fill those gaps, or else the students are going to pay the price, and so are the taxpayers.
Maybe we're just not gambling enough in New Hampshire. Maybe that's what it comes down to.
Well, you know, and you know, I'm really glad you brought that up, Ken, because the lottery kicks in last year. In the current year we're in, supplied the Education Trust Fund with about $100 million, and that's terrific, but statewide we're spending $3.1 billion on public education. So for people who are thinking that the lottery pays for public schools, it doesn't.
But there's historic horse racing in this budget, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
That'll
get
done.
Historic horse racing.
That'll
and
put us over the top.
Yeah, yeah. That'll get us there. So the same way Keno saved full day kindergarten. But
I'm doing my best, Dave. I'm doing my best to help those kindergartners.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things. You know, the School Funding Commission was conscious about was while we model different fiscal policy, particularly directing state funds to where they're needed most, and we could show what that meant for property tax rates in communities across the state. Other than evaluating some elements of various tax policy. You know, we didn't weigh into the tax policy debate, but we did show how increased funding from the state, however that develops, what that would mean for reducing property taxes and for providing student and taxpayer fairness across the state. And obviously during a pandemic year, it's really difficult to have those sort of meetings in the state house with key stakeholders, with members of the public, to be able to really sort of thrash out and debate major items. So I think we recognize that, and that's something that none of us could have predicted back in January of 2020. When we started on this road, but I know that the work that the commission did is going to be really valuable to policymakers going forward. It is something that we continue to discuss with legislators in the House and Senate, and working to build coalitions of in the business community as well, to who recognize the value of a skilled workforce, high school graduates that have gone on some to 4-year colleges, some to 2-year colleges, some to get high value certificates from our community college system and other higher education partners across the state, and contribute to our economy and contribute to the workforce. That's critical for the future in New Hampshire. But it all begins at K-12, and if we don't have a successful K-12 system, that's doing the right thing for the 13,000 kids in Manchester, our state's largest school district, then that's a big part of the future workforce that's really going to be lacking the skills they need to move our economy forward.
Dave, we certainly appreciate you being with us today, and keep us posted.
No, would love to. We'll do that, and I think when we take a look at there's certainly a lot of action coming forward with the Conval lawsuit back in the trial court, and I think you're right. You're ahead of the game here, but this is going to start heating up pretty quickly.
Dave Luneau, thank you so much for being with us on Feldes and Kale.
Thanks, guys. Real pleasure. Talk soon.
Take care.
Take care. We'll take a break. 103.9, 1450, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, Feldes and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, Feldis and Kale. Great to have you with us. We're proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And joining us right now, the executive director of Granite State Dairy Promotion, that would be Amy Hall. Amy, how are you today?
Hi, Ken. How are you today?
I am doing very well. Are you going to ask about Dan?
Well, I wasn't. I was, actually. It's funny you say that, because Dan...
What am I, chopped liver here? I mean, come on, Amy.
No, I just thought, well, Dan's being quiet. Maybe Dan doesn't want to talk to me. Should I ask?
Oh, no. Oh, I always love talking with Amy.
Dan,
it's great to have you on.
Relishes this opportunity to chat with you, Amy. Yeah. Of course. Of course. I have to say, though, I saw a plate the other day. I don't know if this was your plate or not, Amy, because I don't know what kind of car you drive, but I saw a plate on Loudon Road the other day, and it said, hug a cow. Hug a cow.
Was that your car, Amy?
No, but now I'm bummed that I don't have that on my car.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Although I will say this, we have one of the most highly coveted license plates in New Hampshire, from what I understand. It's a commercial plate, and it's just simple. It says milk, and it really
That's
is
great.
One of those plates that people are after. They love it. They want it. We get a lot of beeping horns and waving.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we're talking license plates, we're pretty proud of ourselves. But hug a cow is a good one, too.
How long have you had the milk plate?
Oh, geez, Dan, long before me. I've been in this position 12 years, so when I took the job, we already had the milk plate, so I would imagine quite a long time.
Needless to say, it sounds like you're milking that for all it's worth.
Absolutely we are.
I think New Hampshire has to lead the country in creative vanity plates. I really believe that. You know, we have some really clever ones out there.
Aren't we the state, correct me if I'm wrong, aren't we the state that has the most vanity plates?
I think per capita, yes. Yeah, I think per capita we do have the most vanity plates, which I guess makes us the most vain state in the country, right?
That's one way of looking at it.
Nothing wrong with that, right?
But, no.
But there are some great ones out there. But if I had an opportunity to, and I was driving at the time and I couldn't really take a picture, and I drove right by it, and it was hug a cow. And you're the first person I thought of, Amy. You know,
that's awesome.
And I wondered if it could be your car, but I guess apparently it was not.
No.
But if you could get that plate, you'd want it, right?
I don't know.
No.
I mean, for me personally, yes, I'm happy with the straight up milk plate.
Oh, the milk is great. The milk plate is great. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, for me, Got Milk. I haven't searched that one.
It's seven.
Got Milk would work.
I'll have
to look that up and see if I can't get my own vanity plate. But something tells me that one might be taken, too. Although, in 12 years on the road, I have not seen Got Milk on a license plate.
You have not seen Got Milk. Well, you know, this is going to be our final Feldis and Kale broadcast for April. This is it.
That's our final
broadcast for April, which means May is next, which means we get ever so much closer to the ice cream trail.
That's a true fact.
Yeah, how about that? On Memorial Day weekend, it all kicks off.
So, absolutely, and it's so funny that you mentioned that, because I've been sort of pulling my hair out designing the ice cream trail mobile website that we have on our webpage, which is nhdairypromo.org. So it's sort of a companion to the map. You know, it's 2021. You got to update this. So if you're out in the middle of nowhere, New Hampshire, trying to find Moose Alley cones way up in Pittsburgh and you need directions, you know, so I'm here in that nightmare, making sure that every link works, every picture is formatted correctly. It certainly is a labor of love, but we're getting so close, guys. I'm so excited. And I know people are thrilled. This is about the time of year where I start to get emails, I start to get voicemails, I start to get phone calls. Are you doing an ice cream trail? Are you doing an ice cream trail? When's the ice cream trail?
What do you mean
out?
They're not listening to Feldis and Kale?
If they were listening to us, they should know.
I'm going to have to promote you all on our social media channels.
You're going to have to. Yes, you're going to have to.
And not just for me and dairy, but people are missing out if they're not listening to Feltus and Kale. That much I know is true.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's a true statement. Well, last week we celebrated Earth Day on the show, and you were on that day, actually, and you had some great coverage on Earth Day on the Granite State Dairy Promotion Facebook page. You had a lot about Earth Day on your page.
Well, we did because, you know, Earth Day is a serious thing. And by the way, I would like to wish everybody a happy Earth Day today as well.
Every day is Earth Day, right?
Every day is Earth Day, especially when you're a dairy farmer.
Yeah.
But there's so much information around the environmental benefits of dairy and dairy farming that you can't just say it all in one post. You know, people have sort of short attention spans and they like pictures and the information sometimes can be a little complex. So I just figured, you know what, it's a full day here. So, you know, let's hit people with different and interesting facts. And then, of course, we did the same thing over on our Instagram page. So if you're not following us on Instagram, make sure you're doing that, at NHDairy. So we shared some things that Echo Farm Pudding does down in Hinsdale, the only local pudding maker that New Hampshire has. And if you haven't had Echo Farm Pudding.
Wow.
You are missing out. So thank you.
I didn't know that. See, I didn't go. I'm not that far advanced. I mean, Facebook and Twitter, that's kind of technologically difficult for me. But Instagram and all the other formats, all the other platforms. But I don't want to talk about that. Talk about Echo Farm.
Oh, Echo Farm actually started, believe it or not, many, many, many years ago when Courtney and Beth, who are now my age, which I will not reveal, let's just say it's in the 40s somewhere, they had started making pudding as sort of a 4-H project.
Oh.
You know, so every child in 4-H chooses a project, and they thought, oh, you know, we're going to try to make some pudding. Well, it was so darn popular, and people loved it so much that they thought, wow, you know, we really do have sort of a pot of gold here. So what we want to do, we're going to dip our toe into the water of making pudding. And they have just expanded. I mean, they have one robotic milker now on the farm, so they don't, you know, milk the cows in a parlor. The cows just go in and out. The cows decide when they want to be milked, which is pretty cool when you have a robotic milking machine. But they are an amazing family making an amazing local product. And I believe you can find their product. It's basically in the western corridor of the state. They're in Hinsdale, so I know that the co-ops have it. I believe the Concord co-op might have it. So if you're in the area, definitely go in there and ask for Echo Farm Pudding. My personal favorite, rice pudding. You don't find that everywhere.
No, you don't. You don't. How about tapioca? Do they have tapioca?
Absolutely, they do. Yeah. They have every pudding flavor that, for the most part, you could imagine, remember, or love. Because that's another big one, right? You don't see a lot of tapioca. You know, you're in the dairy aisle, and you know, you see the chocolate, you see vanilla, you know, you see sort of the traditional unexpected flavors. But this is another benefit of local farms. They keep it real.
You're keeping it real with tapioca.
Your favorite is rice. Rice pudding.
Rice pudding. All day, every day. My grandmother used to make it.
Do you put anything on it? Do you put like whipped cream on it or anything like that? Or
cinnamon?
I do cinnamon. Nailed it. I put a little bit of cinnamon on it.
Good. Well, we'll take a short break. Amy Hall is with us, Executive Director of Granite State Dairy Promotion. 103.9, 1450 WKXL, Feltus and Kale. Proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9, 1450 WKXL, Feltus and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotions and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And I've been in the state since the 70s. And I have to tell you, Amy and Dan and everybody else, Echo Farm was not on my radar until you just mentioned them, and now they certainly are. See the power of radio right there. It's the power of radio.
It is, and you know what? This gives me an idea. I might reach out to Courtney and Beth and see if maybe they want to call in to one of your shows.
That would be nice.
That'd be great.
And also maybe send some samples so Dan and I could do taste tests on the radio. Yeah, we'll do taste tests on the radio.
Tapioca, please.
I'm absolutely positive that they would love to do that. And of course, you know, their story is one that unfolded in such an amazing New Hampshire level way that I think listening to them tell you about how it started would be a great joy, not only for the two of you, but for New Hampshire to hear.
And on that day, Amy, you'll have to come into the studio and join us.
Absolutely, Ken.
Yes, we would love to have you in here. You know, we have yet, Dan, to have an in-studio guest.
That's true. And we've been following pretty close, you know, COVID protocols. For those listeners, Ken and I are actually in different rooms. There's a glass separating us.
There is.
So
yes.
That's, you know, in case we get riled up during heated debates. No, just kidding.
Dan's on the left side of the glass, and I'm on the right side of the glass, folks. If anybody's wondering about the geography of the whole thing.
It's a literal and figurative thing.
It's like the hockey of radio, right? You need that partition.
You need some plexiglass between the penalty boxes, yeah.
Well, you're right, though. No, in studio yet, but we can arrange it.
Yes, we can. We
figure
can.
It out.
And I think Amy, as such a part of the program that she is, should be our first in-studio guest.
I think that makes good sense.
I do, too. I do, too. Especially if she brings pudding. And we can all taste test it on the air.
A little bribery never hurts.
That's right. That's right.
That's
right. So what else should we know, Amy? Anything else going on with the Granite State Dairy Promotion? I know you've been tied up with the trail, but anything else that we should know about?
Well, yeah, the trail is big because, of course, you know, I'm the only employee here. So from soup to nuts, I do it all, that's for sure. But on that note, I would just like to throw it out there that I am looking for help. We're going to start dipping our toe into the water now that we come out of COVID and we're getting into event season. And we have a brand new shiny van about to come off the line.
Wow.
You know, with running boards. And it's just easier than a huge pickup truck and a trailer. Plus, it's more cost effective. So if anybody out there, any listeners, would be interested in having a lot of fun handing out chocolate milk, maybe sometimes some Hoodsy cups here and there, at athletic events, on dairy farms, you name it, different community events, let me know. I'd love to sit down and chat with you. I'm fun to work with. My dairy farmers are the best people on the face of the earth, so I can't imagine a better part-time job.
Wow, that sounds fun. I might sign up myself. I can hand out chocolate milk and, you know, little cups of ice cream, sure.
Well, then you can finally drive the milk vanity plate around, Ken, and you can take partial ownership of it.
Wow. That'd be something, huh?
Well, a lot of perks.
Something to brag about.
I'll have to think about that. But, no, that's great. So how would they get in touch, Amy?
Just send me an email, which is Amy, A-M-Y, at nhdairypromo.org.
Simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
And you could get yourself a nice part-time job handing out all these nice little tokens from Granite State Dairy Promotion, chocolate milk, and little Hoodsy cups, and wow, that'd be great.
Great. It is.
Yeah, and I know you do. Great. You do have a lot of events. I know you do.
Well, and we would like to really ramp those up now. And of course, you know, one armed paper hanger all the time over here. Me, it's, you know, we'd like to start to involve somebody who perhaps is interested in learning a little bit more about agriculture.
Sure.
Who's great with people. You know, we have a great partner in John Mortimer and Millennium Running. And, you know, events all throughout 2020 sort of came to a halt, and those events certainly were one of them. And I'm very anxious and excited to get back out to the course, to the marathons, and cheer people on and make sure that they have nature's most perfect recovery beverage at the finish line, a New Hampshire product waiting for them to congratulate them.
Outstanding. Outstanding. And Amy, thanks for joining us once again. We appreciate it, and we will see you in studio very soon.
Absolutely. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Amy. Thank you very much. Take good care.
You too. Have a great day, gentlemen.
All right. You too, Amy. And that'll do it. Feldis and Kale, 103.9 1450 WKXL, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion.